All right, I'm glad to hear you guys are here again for another chapter of Loving It All. Okay, the title of this book, Living with an Awakening Heart. Spiritual traditions acknowledge the heart as central to genuine human transformation. So what does it mean when our heart is suffering? Okay, if we notice our heart suffering, we need to come home to ourselves. The heart suffers when it's being bombarded by conflicting messages from the dualistic mind. This is good, this is bad, I hate this, I love this. This discord creates inner turmoil. Using the Enneagram typology as a reference point, we can see that there are 9 patterns of fixations of the heart. By self-observation of the passion acting out its particular habitual pattern, we can study the symptoms and sources of our suffering and move toward the virtues of spiritual maturity and presence. This is, of course, what we want. Suffering is self-created. By allowing the ego and its dualistic perceptions to rule us, we automatically create our own suffering. When we let go to the innate wisdom of the heart, our inner guide will let us know what to do in every moment. And when we trust this guidance, there's no need to categorize anything at all. Things are not good or bad. They simply are as they are. And since we are the ones who attracted them to ourselves, we need to take 100% personal responsibility for those we judge and those we judge bad. Here is our path to inner realization, tranquility, and presence. You no doubt have heard the expression, let go and let God. Well, it happens to be true. But the ego is trying to convince you that letting go is a bad strategy, and you must listen to its fearful interpretations of the outer world to protect you from danger. A good way to look at your life is as a movie. The projector is your mind, and it's creating a movie out there, and you allow your emotions to tell you if something is good or bad. My wife and I had a graphic experience of this recently. We were watching the PBS classic Downton Abbey. This is basically a nighttime soap opera, and I talked about this in the last chapter, but I'll repeat it. There's no difference from watching one's own egoic reality and emotionally reacting to that movie. But if you live in love, then the ego projections diminish or stop. Emotional reactions lessen or cease. You have the assurance of the present moment. You have the faith that what you need in any situation will be provided. All the wisdom you need is available to you right now. You aren't emotionally invested in the future because it is imaginary. You don't need to regret the past. The past doesn't exist either. These are just thought forms created by the egoic mind, trying to protect you from a supposedly hostile world out there. But the only out there is what our mind creates to cause us to react to it. We are basically reacting to our own fear-based creations, and then we wonder why we can't find peace. Okay, here's the key to this chapter. Living in love means serving the whole. Okay, as I was beginning to go write this book, Frame Shifting, A Path to Wholeness, Loving Healing Press 2008, you can get this one on Amazon too if you want, or you can get a used copy. As I was preparing to go on a book tour to promote this book, I was called to attend a county board meeting where they were debating whether or not to allow a 3,500-head pig farm, CAFO, also called a factory farm, in our area. Well, a number of experts were called, veterinarians, doctors, epidemiologists. They all came to say it's a bad idea from a health viewpoint. On the opposite of side, of course, there were a few farmers who got up and said, "You can't tell me what to do with my land," sort of the John Wayne ethic. By the end of the testimony, 29 supervisors took a vote, and to my shock, the vote was 26-3 in favor of allowing the CAFO to be built. Hadn't the supervisors heard the testimony? I heard later that representatives of large agribusiness interests had called these representatives and told them that if they blocked the CAFO, they would be sued by these companies and it could bankrupt the county in legal fees. So the board was intimidated. Once this happened, I felt called by the inner voice to run for a county board seat. I mentioned this in the last chapter. I won the seat. There were three of us progressives on the board, and there were 26 what you could call right-wing farmers. Not blaming anybody, but that was just their point of view. Well, while we were there, I was successful, along with the other two progressives, in blocking the hog farm. We also stopped a local power plant from dumping its coal tailings, which contained arsenic and other toxic minerals, into an open pit where they could reach into the ground and pollute our groundwater. We talked them into putting it into road tar so that when the roads were retarred, it would be captured there and it couldn't escape into the environment. So all of this was really, really helpful, we felt. However, I finally decided to resign from the board. I mentioned this before again in the last chapter. I resigned because the value difference between my perspective and the majority of people on the board was so radically different. I thought, I can be more helpful outside the board. So I decided to go on a book tour. However, the book was published in 08, and this is 2010, so the book would kind of cool off. I'd sold some copies online, but it pretty well cooled off, but I decided to do the tour anyway. And I basically left Illinois and went to a number of different states, ending up in Taos, New Mexico. I sold a mere 38 books, despite traveling to 7 states and driving over 3,500 miles. So the book had grown cold in those 2 years, and I chose to stay local with meetings and committees on the board rather than travel and promote the book. However, I'm glad I ran for office and was able to contribute to our community. Here's an example of listening to the voice of spirit. My ego wanted to get out there and sell that book. I had some radio interviews and the book was selling. But winning a board seat and staying in Viroqua and not promoting the book allowed it to go cold. Was this good or bad? Hard to know, isn't it? I did what I did. And I'm pleased this CAFO did not get built and that the toxic tailings from the coal plant went into asphalt for recovering streets rather than being dumped in open pit. This did not make me a local hero. I just did what spirit prompted me to do for the good of the whole. All right, let's look at an Enneagram perspective on living in love. Let's look at type 3, the achiever or the performer. This is an image type. Threes have as their passion deceit. Primarily, this means they come to think that they are their image. And they want everybody else to believe that, too. Their role becomes their identity. They can be like chameleons. What I mean by that is they can adopt the image to please whatever audience they're talking to. That's why their passion is called deceit, because they're not really honest with who they are. They are driven and goal-oriented. They become human doers. They drive themselves unmercifully in a pursuit of goal attainment. As children, they learn that to get rewarded for what they achieved, they were loved rather than being loved for who they were. Okay, to live authentically in love, threes must give up their image and become real. I have a great deal of admiration for threes who give up the applause and commit to living life with authenticity. In the previous chapter, I introduced the idea of thinking with the heart. Science has shown us that the heart actually does think, although it's very different from the mind. And if the mind and the heart can be in communion with each other, this is the perfect scenario. Those with eyes to see can admit that their thinking with the mind alone has gotten us god-awful nowhere, of course, except living in hell. Turns out that hell is not someplace other than right here, right now. And if you are willing to let your mind rule, that's a worthy definition of hell on earth. Okay, resistance to what is enables the ego to strengthen itself. I've talked about this before. Why does the ego resist what is? Because it always wants more, or different, or better in some way that is comparison with the present state. Things are rarely the way the ego wants them. Have you noticed that yet? So you could say resistance to life is the modus operandi of the ego. But we can consciously weaken the ego and eventually integrate it into our larger self or higher self. Okay, there's an example I'm going to give you of a life of non-resistance. There's a difference between loving what is and accepting what is. For the purposes of this book, I'm going to propose that both strategies work. When I was 25 years old, I had some very serious back surgery. I had what's called a double lumbar laminectomy. Two discs in my lower back were partially removed. I knew nothing about surgery or the orthopedic surgeon who did about 10 of these surgeries a day. 6 weeks after the surgery, I was so stiff I could not bend over at the waist, so I went to see him. Sitting in the waiting room, a very pleasant lady asked me, "Are you doing your exercises?" And I said, "What exercises?" Apparently, the doctor was supposed to have given me some rehabilitative exercises to keep my back from stiffening up. Furious, I went into his office and confronted him. "What's this about exercises?" He replied, "Oh, I must have forgotten to give those to you. We must do them now to break loose the adhesions that had formed in my back." So I did them, and my back went into spasm. I had to wear a cast for 6 months to keep my back straight. Even after I took the cast off, my back was in constant pain. Clearly, back then, I was not loving at all. I was into victimization and blame. Looking for sympathy, I complained to everyone about my back, even total strangers. After a while, I got tired of listening to myself whine, so I decided to just accept it as it was and live my life. About 3 months later, I noticed it didn't hurt anymore. This taught me the spiritual principle, whatever you pay attention to expands. By not paying attention to the pain and just accepting as it was, I allowed it to dissipate. The ego will not give up easily its dominance over your life. It is a cunning trickster, and it will resort to all manner of trickery to convince you to resist what is. The major focus of the ego is the external world. This is why Jesus reportedly said, "I am not of this world," John 17:14. He lived in the world but was not moved by the world's temptations, aversions, and so forth. He was above it all. So, when we take the world seriously, we give weight to the illusion that our mind creates. We live in a mind-made world. So, the only wise strategy is to love it all, accept it all, with zero resistance to anything. Now, I'm not saying that a person who's victimized or the target of domestic violence should just accept that. No, they should take responsibility for their situation and do what they can to change it. We can consciously allow life to manifest what it will by aligning ourselves with our divine purpose. Just like the different organs of your body all have a purpose, so do we as cells of the cosmic whole. If we follow the guidance of cosmic will, we will do what we need to do according to the divine design, and we will live lives of fulfillment and joy. Does this mean there will be no bumps along the way? Nope. Everybody has got bumps along the way. Even if you've chosen the life path that the divine design has for us, there's still going to be bumps. But this is where trust in life and its purposes come in. If we trust the guidance of life itself and put the ego in its place in the background, we can be assured that our lives will have meaning and value. So, what does it mean to live in love? Well, it would mean that fear would dissipate from your experience. There'd be nothing to fear, since you would be expressing unconditional love for all life. You would see everything as a natural extension of yourself. You would give of yourself freely in sacred service because you would know you're part of one cosmic whole. You'd have a smile on your face. Joy for absolutely no reason would occur. And you would give thanks for all things, even things you might have judged bad or wrong in the past. Now you would see them as indicators of your evolved nature and a reminder of the need for humility and openness. So the overall message of this book is just what the title says. Loving it all means to love everything that comes to you, because it's showing you your unhealed shadow aspects as well as your loving intent and gratitude. Everything that's contained in your mind can and will be projected on the screen of your life experience. Love it all. This way, the ego cannot gain a foothold on your emotions and your satisfaction. By resisting nothing, we accept life as it is and allow for the clarification that comes with surrendering to the one spirit that's animating the entire cosmos. This is the way to perfect peace. Now you may say to me, okay, Dr. Banner, that's all well and good, but I still am going to have challenges that I need to fix. Well, there are things we all need to change as we move through life. And if spirit tells you to change them, change them. But if your ego tells you to change them, I urge you to be careful. The problem with ego's directions is you will do things that will have what I could call reverberate throughout your life, because it's not connected to the pattern of the larger whole. See, let me give you an example. After World War II, we built all these houses and created all these suburbs for people coming home from the war, the men that came home from the war. Well, an unintended consequence of this is urban congestion and suburban sprawl. Well, that wasn't foreseen when they did it. They thought they were just doing something to help the veterans. So you got to be really careful if you're following the directions of the ego, because you're likely to have unintended consequences. These are very, very common. Anyway, this is probably enough for this chapter, Living in Love. ¶¶